How can we mobilize this new relationship between Jews and Christians in the 21st century? What we've done is something what we call faith-based diplomacy, which is when people take their biblical support for Israel and turn it into real political action.
This is the Babel Undone podcast. It's a podcast for curious people that want to get a deeper understanding about our complex world. And I'm one of the hosts. My name is Johnny Moore. I'm president of JDA Worldwide and the Congress of Christian Leaders. And I am joined by
Joseph D'Souza, the Archbishop of the Good Shepherd Church of India, an Indian based in India and doing ministry all over the world.
Bishop, today we're speaking about
how faith-based diplomacy can shape peaceful alliances in the world. Many times on this podcast, we have discussed the value of interfaith work. We have heard from experts on how faith and the shared values of the Judeo-Christian religions have been a source of tremendous good in the world. Today, we're going to be talking about how that has been true in both history and the present reality for Israel. In our lifetimes, there has been a significant amount of work done through the avenue of faith-based diplomacy in the Middle East. In fact, such efforts have directly led to changes in Israel's standing in the world. This important work can serve as a catalyst for forging peaceful alliances elsewhere in the world, and we are going to have this conversation with someone who's well acquainted with the power of faith-based diplomacy.
Josh Reinstein is his name. He leads the Israel Allies Foundation, a nonprofit organization which encourages faith-based support for the Jewish community among elected members of legislatures and parliaments worldwide. He also hosts Israel Now News, which is broadcast to 35 million viewers in 191 countries around the world. He has, on multiple occasions, been numbered among the most 50 influential Jews in the world. And each year he releases an annual list of the world's top Christian allies of Israel. All of this based upon his work at the Center of Faith and Diplomacy. So we're going to talk today about faith-based diplomacy. Josh, in every one of our conversations on Babel Undone with lots and lots of interesting people, I always like to start with a very simple question, which, by the way, you can answer however you want, okay? So you can give us a very practical answer, or you can be as philosophical as you feel today. And here's the question. Who is Josh Reinstein?
Well, yeah, that's a very hard question. It's not as simple as it sounds, but I guess I'm a Jewish Zionist who made Aliyah from North America in 1999 and wanted to do something good for my country, Israel, and worked very hard to try to establish a new way of mobilizing support for Israel from countries and people. And I am someone who understands that the God of Israel is doing amazing things in our times. I've seen the fulfillment of biblical prophecy here unfold in the land of Israel, but I've also seen daily miracles, especially over the last year since the war began on October 7th. So I'm driven by faith and my commitment to stand with God, country, and family.
And Josh, you've written a book and spoken a lot about faith-based diplomacy. So, you know, it's you know, a term that a lot of people may not be familiar with. They think of diplomacy as something for governments to do, not for, you know, individual religious actors. So, like, where did you come to this, and what does it mean, and how is this tool useful? Like, help us better understand.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Titus Trump and the Triumph of Israel about 4 years ago, The Power of Faith-Based Diplomacy, and it's still applicable today. We realized during the Second Intifada that it was Christians, not countries, that were standing with Israel, and it was Christians who were bringing their support for Israel. And we said, how can we work with Christians? How can we mobilize this new relationship between Jews and Christians in the 21st century? And what we've done is something what we call faith-based diplomacy, which is when people take their biblical support for Israel and turn it into real political action. And today, faith-based diplomacy is responsible for around 80% of all of Israel's diplomatic successes. It's the reason we have embassies in Jerusalem again. It's the reason we have anti-BDS and anti-Semitism legislation in America and around the world. It's even the reason we have observer status at the African Union. Faith-based diplomacy has become a very powerful weapon when it comes to engaging and organizing political support for Israel. And I believe this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's going to be a lot more support that we're seeing in the years to come as this idea and organization grows within other countries and our network continues to grow. So today, for example, we have 54 Israel Allies caucuses in 54 countries with 1,500 legislators in our network. And these are all people of faith who've taken their biblical support and turned it into real political action. So we're seeing incredible success from this new phenomenon in the 21st century.
Do you, Josh, do you have a caucus in the UK, many countries of the Europe, of Europe?
Yes, we actually just launched last week our 20th European caucus in Portugal. We've had the UK Parliamentary Israelis Caucus, which is chaired by Mark Pritchard, for many, many years. But we also have a EU caucus. It's the largest, run by Bert Rassen. We have caucuses in Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Central Europe, all over, a massive network of people who are working to support Israel based on our common values.
And for these like caucuses in parliaments, you know, what do they do? Like, what do the legislatures do? What are they committing to do? Like practically speaking, is this just, you know, that they hold events and it's sort of ceremonial, or they're like focusing on regulations or legislation? Or, I mean, help us understand. If I'm a parliamentarian sitting in some country and I want to join the caucus, what am I signing up to?
Well, there's three real distinctions of an Israelis caucus. First of all, and most important, we're working caucuses. So we're not about ceremonies and tea parties and things of that effect. We take on real issues and we try to get them done. Three main issues usually are the importance of Jerusalem as the undivided capital of Israel, the threat of Iran, and fighting BDS and anti-Semitism. Secondary area, which is unique, is that we're a network. So there's a lot of groups that are like England to Israel, or France to Israel, or Germany to Israel. Our caucuses cooperate. First of all, they cooperate on the European level. So the 20 caucuses, they sign joint resolutions, and they sign joint statements, and they work on joint causes. But they also work internationally with all the 54 caucuses on six continents as well on specific issues. For example, our response to October 7th. So it's a real working caucus. It's a caucus that's a network. We do everything from the members do everything from legislation, resolutions, hearings on issues. We just provide the information, the education. It's the members of Parliament themselves that do the real work. So we're here to try to help them with the information and getting it to them in a speedy time and the education. And we do events like next week in the EU, we'll be holding a symposium on the threat of Iran to Europe. These are educational events to try to get people to understand what's actually happening. But it's the members of Parliament themselves who do the work. And then the third thing that makes us different than other organizations is there's a faith aspect to it. People in our network understand there's a special importance to Israel. There's a special importance to Jerusalem, that it comes from something. Now, not everyone is a Bible-believing Christian. Not everyone is Jewish in our network. We have a chair who's actually Hindu. But they understand that faith takes a very important role in what we do, and that Israel is not just like other nations. The reason that the world is focused on this small country, no bigger than the size of El Salvador, and it's in the front page of every newspaper every week and every day, is because so many people care about this area.
Josh, talk to us a little bit more about the caucuses' interplay with the media, because so much of the media today is in the hands of the progressive left around the world, including my country. And they narrate a story about Israel, which is not true, and and engage in anti-Semitism without realizing that they are engaging in anti-Semitism. So how do these caucuses work with the media?
You know, any media outlet that tries to make a moral equivalency to a free democratic country and a terror organization should immediately be you know, disregarded as fake news. But what we've seen is that the rise of social media has been a very important factor. We saw this just in America in the last election, that even though a lot of the mainstream media there is very biased and against one of the candidates, still his messaging and his information is getting out. We're also seeing a lot of things like what you're doing, podcasts. We're seeing Christian media. We're seeing, you know, big steps going towards Israel to try to give the truth. Last year, for example, at the NRB, they passed a resolution saying that from now on, we're not going to use the term West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria. That was a landmark decision in trying to get the truth of what's going on. And it's been so confusing. For that issue, for example, there are many Christians who think that Judea and Samaria and the West Bank are two different places. They didn't even know it's the same geographic location. So there's so much misinformation. There's so much that needs to be done to get the truth out. That's why your program and programs like yours are so important. But I think social media will be a real push on this. I'm seeing this already in a lot of different forums, especially on Twitter, that for the first time, we're getting a lot of information out. And I'll tell you another thing that's very interesting. The people aren't so gullible. A lot of people see through the lies. Inherently, it doesn't make sense that, you know, you have take October 7th. The narrative of the mainstream media is that, you know, these poor terrorists came into your country, and because they're downtrodden and they feel terrible about the situation in Gaza, they were justified in raping women, beheading babies, and burning families alive. So the average person on the in their home are like, what? What does that even mean? You know, you have a free democracy in Israel that is trying everything, bending over backwards to try to make peace with everyone, and then they're attacked like this. How could it be that there's a moral equivalency? So if you look at different, you know, things like, I'll give you an example in Europe, Eurovision, all right? So the professionals who voted on Eurovision, Israel was, you know, one of the worst, you know, performances. They went down on all the top-tier people. But the people vote, we came in second, because there's that quiet majority at home saying, you know, we're rooting with Israel. We want them to fight terror. We want them to be safe and secure.
Yeah, and it's like the facts just tell a different story. I mean, the only explanation is anti-Semitism, because, you know, I was arguing with used to be a friend of mine, you know, on the left about Israel's response to October 7th, and, you know, this like classic thing that all of us have heard is like, but Gaza was an open air prison, and these people were miserable, and Israel was asking for it, is basically what the person was saying. And I just, like, this is a smart person. I mean, this is not a dumb person. You know, this is someone that had been so habitually propagandized by the press that they actually believe this. And aside from the fact that, you know, one could just look at the pictures of Gaza and what was happening in Gaza beforehand, but like, no country in the world would do anything different than, actually, countries would do something different than what Israel's done, because, you know, Israel is like, unlike any army in the world, you know, distributes warning leaflets and millions of text messages and all these things to sort of, I imagine that, like, an army attacks your country, you know, a terrorist, kills all these people, puts babies in ovens, like, it's horrific crimes against women and girls, all these horrible things happen. And then, you know, rather than just pummel them to death, you send warnings so that all the bad guys, if they want, they could leave with the civilians anyhow. I mean, it's just, the whole thing is just absolutely crazy. But one of the most remarkable things about your work, Josh, that I noticed just from the outside, you had these caucuses, most of them before October 7th. You've added some since October 7th, including some very important ones. But you had them before October 7th, and you're like, your allies around the world, they're still there. They were there before October 7th. They're still there now. So why? Like, why? Because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people shirk away. You know, they pay less attention. They decide to not get into controversy, even if they support Israel. Like, what makes your effort different compared to some of these others?
The main difference is faith. It's something that has been really inspiring, especially since October 7th. We've only launched actually one caucus since October 7th. We've had 53 before, because we've been working on creating a diplomatic Iron Dome for Israel. and getting them the information to do the work. But they have been fiercely pro-Israel. They have stepped up in ways that we didn't expect. The Congressional Israelites Caucus in Washington has been at the forefront of every pro-Israel stance that's happening in Congress. And we're seeing that in Latin America and Africa and Europe. And I believe the issue is faith, and I'll explain why. If you have a political agenda, then political things change. You know, politics change. People are in power. People are elected. Other ideas come out there. And so if your agenda is political, you're not going to support Israel. We also only have one vote at the UN compared to 22 Arab votes, many more Muslim votes. So it's not a good idea to support Israel politically. And if you have an economic agenda, again, not a good idea to support Israel, because we don't have the oil wealth of the countries around us. Now, of course, we're the startup nation, and we have natural gas, and we're developing, but we don't have the wealth of the countries around us. It's only people who put values and beliefs ahead of economic and political concerns that consistently stand with Israel. And that's what's so important about the network. And when people do something for Israel, it's not a political gesture. It's a statement of faith. So I'll give you an example. I'm Jewish, okay? I don't eat bacon. If someone offered me a bacon cheeseburger and said, I'll pay you $1 million to eat it, I'll say no. It doesn't matter. You know, it's a thing of faith. We're seeing this within our network, too. It doesn't matter what you offer them. It doesn't matter how you try to cajole them. They believe that part of their faith is standing with Israel and the God of Israel and the Bible of Israel. And they're going to do it no matter what you do. And it could be something that's just a little bit inside them. It could be something that people don't know about them. But personally, they take this very seriously. And also, other members within our caucus, when they do something as a statement of faith, it challenges their colleagues to step up as well. And they answer the call. So I think what's so unique about what we're doing and why it's been so effective is that we have that concept of faith-based diplomacy. This isn't just like normal, you know, political talk and ideas. This is people of faith getting involved in the political process and doing good things.
So I've often told my Jewish friends, particularly here in Europe, you know, we're here in London, you know, recording our conversation with you, and you know, I've multiple nights, you know, I've had dinners in kosher restaurants all over this continent, from the UK and, you know, in the EU, because I'm always seeing Jewish friends of mine, and many of my friends are observant, and it's amazing how many of them. The men carry a ball cap to put over their kippahs when they go in the street, because you just don't feel safe anymore here. And I always say to them, the good news is in my community, in the evangelical community, you know, around the world, there's 700 million of us. I don't know, Bishop, a single Christian that has flinched under all this like media pressure, under all the propaganda. I just don't know one. And in fact, it's like the exact opposite. You know, they double down in response to the criticism, because there is something more there. I just want to ask one, and we're amazing, we're you know almost out of time here, but I just want to ask one more question, Josh, sort of a different, adjacent but different subject. You've been in Israel most of the time during this war since October 7th and after October 7th. So, you know, for our listeners who may have never been to Israel or who you know haven't had that experience, what has it been like, you know, going through the last year and some months?
Well, it's there's two parts. First of all, what you said before is 100% right. We not only have a situation where people haven't turned on us in the evangelical community, they've been fierce proponents. So I think one of the big takeaways of October 7th is this is the first time that at least I know of in the last 2,000 years that the Jewish people are not alone. There have been people on the streets fighting for Israel, talking to Israel. The ICC example in The Hague, there were 500 people who came out against it with Israeli flags. They were all Christians. So it's amazing to see the mobilization of the Christian world. But the big takeaway is actually very ironic, I would say, from what's happening. You know, we were attacked by Iran, the Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah, the ICC, the UN. And in some ways from the Biden-Harris administration, too. You know, they rejected sending us weapons. They supported comments like genocidal comments that was coming out of Hamas. And we defeated them all. This little tiny country is on the precipice of complete victory. We have destroyed Hamas. We have beaten Hezbollah, the most feared terror organization, into rubble. Iran is trembling. And we've taken away their air defenses. They know that if they do anything, we're coming after everything. So the big takeaway is that this is a tremendous time for people of faith. God has stood before us and has defended us against the world in this battle. And we're coming out on top. And that doesn't happen by chance. We're a very small country. We're not winning these wars because Jews are great athletes. Right? It's because the God of Israel is here. And I think there's been a huge revival of Judaism in Israel. I see it. My secular friends are sending me the Torah portion of the week and showing how it connects to the news cycle. You know, more people are putting on tefillin. More people are understanding what God is doing here in the land. And I think, ironically, a war that was meant to destroy us and crush us and bring us down has lifted us up to new heights. And that only can be done by Hashem, or what you call the God of Israel.
Amen.
Josh, thanks for making the time, and thanks for all you do all around the world. Bishop, that was a fascinating conversation with Josh. Yeah, and we talk a lot about Israel in this podcast. It's partly my passion. Your experience, you've been there as well, and also it shaped so much of our world in the last couple of years, from the euphoria of peace with the Abraham Accords to the October 7th attacks and the wars that followed. Whatever one's view on all of those things are, I think my views are quite obvious. Your views are quite obvious. One of the things that inspires me from talking to Josh is it shows what one person can do with a mission. And he just went to all these governments all around the world and created these alliances of parliamentarians to like take this issue as their cause.
Yeah,
and it's incredible.
53 and 54 nations, he's right. And he referred to that in a little way. But I think he said, now we as Jews don't feel we are alone. And, you know, I could take those words and write them and imprint them. Because in the Holocaust, the church and the Christians did not stand with them.
Yeah, that's right.
And we have now turned over the page of history. The church has had time to do the necessary self-examination, repent. And now the reality is the Jews know and the Jewish nation knows that Christians, and especially evangelical Christians, are their biggest allies, and we are all over the world. And there's 700, as you say, 700 million of us. And that's a great body. And I think he's tapping into something that is very necessary, because those who demonize Israel or the anti-Semitic, they have had a vast army of the Soviet Union, Iran, and all this money and political forces and ideology to spread this anti-Jew agenda for all of these years. And even good-thinking Christians get confused with that, and they don't know how to respond to the crisis that erupted after October 7. So have somebody like him tapping into Christians who are in parliament and creating this alliance is a brilliant thing. And I think it's not too late that he has done it. And it's a long time coming. And definitely with regards to Israel, as you will find, what the Hamas leadership and Hezbollah in Iran meant for evil, I think the Lord is going to use for good and for the good of Israel.
Yeah, it's when you go to Israel, you should go to, and you've been, and I've been many times, but go to Yad Vashem, which is the National Holocaust Museum. And there's a garden there that's for the righteous among the nations. And it's a garden dedicated to the few Gentiles that stood with the Jews during the Holocaust. And, you know, these iconic figures like Corrie ten Boom and these sorts of people. Small garden of iconic people that stood against all of that. And I used to think when I walked through there, you know, what would I have done had I been alive during the Holocaust? And then on October 7th, which was this the day where more Jews died on a single day in absolutely horrific days at ways. And one day since the Holocaust, I was alive. And I believe this is a question we all have to ask, and we have to answer it. And I think that's why we spend time on this podcast having this conversation. And it was a super interesting one with Josh.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in, .plus.